The 11 o'clock hour of Wildy's house. Woo, from windy Rainishki Field and Platteville. Begins now. Jesse, how did the Jesse Nelson show go?
Dan in Brothertown, our Wildy and Tausch trivia contestant. He went perfect, so we are off to an official perfect week with both Levi and Plover yesterday and Dan in Brothertown getting every question correct. I feel like I've taken it easy on trivia so far, which means those who will compete in the back end of the week are probably going to be in for a rocky course. So we'll see how it all plays out there. But yeah, Dan in Brothertown, a great addition to the Jesse Nelson show. I hope we get to do it again tomorrow as well.
I thought you would extend the show longer than you did.
I mean, I guess I could have. Tomorrow, we live and learn. Isn't Tausch just saying that? We learn from what we've done and we move forward, and now we'll know that tomorrow I can do it full 20 minutes, monologuing on whatever I please. We won't even play trivia during the Jesse Nelson show tomorrow.
Well, if it stays as windy as it is right now, people might prefer to listen to you than to listen to me as I try to hide behind stanchions and walls, etc., to make it a little more manageable. Tausch, how are things at Badgers practice?
I don't know if we have Tausch, believe it or not.
How long did he think the Jesse Nelson show was going to go?
Great question. I thought he was there because I heard him say, yeah, but maybe he was talking to his pal Matt LePay or somebody. I don't know. Apparently, we don't have Tausch. So
I mean, it is 11:07, which even our bad clock management wouldn't generally leave us so few
unless
minutes.
Unless Bulaga's on, we should be in better shape than this.
Well, that's very fair. So one last question about trivia. Dan in Brothertown is the father of the new head basketball coach for the women's program at UW-Green Bay. So is he no longer Coyote Dan?
Phoenix Dan? He did share with me that he is officially retiring the moniker of Coyote Dan. Yes,
One less reason to play that song.
We're running out of it now. Yes, his daughter has taken over as the new head coach of the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay women's basketball program, Kayla Carias. So congratulations to Kayla. Congratulations to Dan. I did ask him off air. He has met Doug Gottlieb. They played golf together, from the sounds of it, at one of their outings this summer. So,
and he'll be the co-host of his next show.
And he'll be on radio nationally before we know it. Right before the Jesse Nelson show, potentially.
So Tucker Kraft, as promised, is off the PUP list and is taking part on a return to action basis, which means he is participating, but he's not going to do teamwork. He will do only 11-on-11 drills, or won't do 11-on-11 drills, only will do individual drills. Right now they're doing routes on air, so that is something that Tucker can do. When they get to 11-on-11, we will see how much Zach Tom is able to do. But again, Zach Tom not going to play in the preseason opener in Cleveland, just because he will only be getting his first snaps of real football action here during today's practice. They practice today, tomorrow. Thursday is a closed to the public practice, and then they will travel to Cleveland on Friday to face the Browns on Saturday. I see Dontavian Wicks here. He's still, I don't know how many snaps he's gotten, because I know that's a concern, but he is here and they are going through their routes on air as we speak. All right. So Tausch is going to reconnect with us.
Apparently he's taking the segment off. That's the word we're getting.
Sources close to the program. All right. Well,
can I ask you a question, Jason, before Tausch comes back about practice this week? Does it change at all? Going from gearing, like the first couple of weeks where you're just getting ready for, you know, whatever is to come, you're just getting back into the flow of things. And then you're gearing up for family night and you're, you know, working toward, you know, putting on the show for the fans with the fireworks and whatnot. This week there's an actual game, be it a preseason game on the road in Cleveland. Does the vibe at practice change or does the style of practice change at all during those different phases leading up to the first preseason game?
I'm trying to manipulate the mute button so people don't hear wind for the entire 11 o'clock hour.
Very tech savvy of you.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, it does change somewhat. Now, they did finish their installations, or at least the vast majority of their installations of the offensive and defensive playbooks before family night. I think they have a little more, based on what Matt LaFleur said, to install. But I think they feel really good. By the way, they're doing these routes on air, and they go in the depth chart order. So when they do two wide receivers, it was Reed and Dobbs that ran. And now on the second group, it was Wicks and Watson. So I don't think Wicks has tumbled down the depth chart by any means. The third group is Bo Melton and Samari Toure, if you're scoring at home. Now, to your question, Jesse, they will do some, like, kind of like the regular season where they do some stuff off of cards so they have some idea of what the Browns are going to run. But this is still training camp. This is still as they're preparing for the games that come. So they can't just start game planning for a preseason game, especially when you consider that they don't really want to show much, right? So I think it does change some. There will be maybe a few fewer competitive periods than we're accustomed to in the first couple of weeks of camp, but I don't think there's any question. They still got plenty of work to do, and I think that'll be part of the equation. Tucker Kraft is fully in pads, so that is as we had hoped. He is returning to action on a limited basis. So is Josh Jacobs, who only did some drill work for family night, did not do 11-on-11. We'll see if he's in the team drills coming up here a little bit later in practice. Jesse, I know Tausch gives me a hard time for not knowing the preseason schedule by heart a couple weeks ago, but they do open in Cleveland, then it's Denver, then they're at home against Baltimore. If you get to choose one of those three cities, I understand Baltimore's coming here.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland, Denver, Baltimore. It's Power Rankings Tuesday while Tausch takes the segment off. What order are you putting those in?
I wish that they would have gone... Well, here's what I wish would have happened. I wish the Brewers and Packers could have been on the same page because the Guardians come to Milwaukee. I wish it would have worked out where either the Cleveland... Because, you know, Tausch always says Cleveland is the sister city to Milwaukee. They're the very comparable states, Wisconsin and Ohio. I wish it would have worked out so either Packers fans and Brewers fans could go to Cleveland and get a Browns-Guardians weekend in, or that the Cleveland fans could have come here and gotten a Packers-Brewers weekend in. So it's unfortunate that that's the case. I've never been to Denver outside of, we drove through it one time on a family trip coming back from Disneyland in Los Angeles, like 2007. So we just drove through Denver. I would love to go spend more time in Denver. So that is number one on my power rankings. I visited my brother-in-law out in the Baltimore area. So I've been there a little bit. That would be number two. And then I would probably stay home in the basement like you. And then I would go to Cleveland, and that would round out my power rankings.
All right. First of all, Cleveland, highly underrated.
Nah.
We obviously have ESPN Cleveland. Yes. You go down to the flats, like if you're a young person. If you're old like me, you're probably not hitting the flats. But Cleveland, underappreciated. I would actually, believe it or not, put Baltimore ahead of Denver. Obviously, the Mile High City is beautiful. You got your Coors Light, Golden, Colorado nearby. But I enjoy Denver. I think it's a great town. I enjoyed visiting there. But I think Baltimore, not the area where, like, the Wire was going on. But there's a lot of really great areas in Baltimore, so I'm a big fan of Baltimore.
It's interesting you bring this up because I was thinking this the other day. I actually think we talk about going for Packers road trips every few years. We went to, infamously Detroit in January a few years ago. We've been to Cleveland for the road trip. We've talked about going to Buffalo or Philadelphia or Kansas City for one. I think the Packers road trip as a fan is actually better in the preseason because you get to go and it doesn't have to be so intensely like focused on the game. If you want to go to Denver and you want to go experience the city of Denver and then also go check out the stadium, you can kind of do it in a, like a lower maintenance kind of way. I think that's actually a better plan to go watch a preseason game for a road trip to go see the Packers somewhere and go experience another NFL stadium than it would be to go in the middle of December or November when there's a playoff race and it could be a huge game with big stakes. Like, if you're going for the vacation component of it with people who would value that more than just going to the game, I think it would be better going on to a preseason game in August.
Wow. So you're not stressed out about the outcome.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not so much like we have to be here because the game starts at 7. It's like, yeah, we'll roll out. Like, think about when you've gone to a Packer preseason game. Well, as a fan, you can roll in the first quarter and it's totally fine if you miss the first series or two. You can do your thing tailgating and just experience the place. And it's a beautiful time out where you don't have to bundle up and worry about bringing all the clothes from your hotel, what you're packing when you're flying somewhere. Like, I think it's a lot easier this way.
I'm not going to lie. It's a good thing Tausch wasn't on here for this segment because he'd get after you for not being competitive even as a fan.
Probably.
So, I think it worked out well. But he is scheduled to rejoin us from Badgers practice in Platteville in the next segment. We'll see if he actually does it or not. He still needs to tell us about Tito's and Kohler Services. I hope he comes back. More from practices across, spanning the states. And, of course, Woe Nelly all still ahead. So stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
Sources in Platteville tell me that old boy has returned to our program. I hope that his time away was spent diligently gathering all kinds of fascinating information about the Badgers during their practice. Welcome back, Mark Tauscher. Thank you for your service. What do you got for us?
Yeah, it's really good competitive drills. A lot of fun. Some plays being made. I think I said this last year when we were down here for practice. The wide receiver room and some of the stuff that, you know, we hoped were going to pop, I think we're going to even see more. I think that room is as deep and as good as we've seen in a long time. So that, and I just keep being impressed with the size, length, off of the edge of this defense. I think that's going to be, if you know, from a Badger fan standpoint, if you're looking for things to, you know, wonder and hopefully see difference from what we've seen under Luke Fickell in his first year, I think you're going to see that and be pretty happy about it. So good competitive finish to practice, and they're still kind of hammering around here a little bit, but it looks like the brunt of the work for today has been done.
So Their edge rushers are like Tarek Saleh, always revved up to come off that corner from what you can see.
Tarek is a Wisconsin Badger Hall of Famer. I think these guys might even, from an athletic standpoint, they got a good
slightly
opportunity.
Better.
But yeah, if they can be as productive as Tarek Saleh, I think they'll be pretty happy.
All right, so doing some one-on-ones, receiver or tight end, depending on your persuasion, versus safeties and corners. And Romeo Doubs has gotten the better of Jair Alexander. Christian Watson just had a really nice double move and smoked Eric Stokes. Jaden Reed got the better of Keyshawn Nixon. I've spent a lot of time, Tausch, talking about how the offense has struggled against this defense. Is it possible that it's because the offensive line has not held up? Because when they're going one-on-one and there's nobody to worry about rushing the quarterback, the offense has been pretty darn good in one-on-one situations. Does that tell me anything, or am I reading too much into it?
You're probably reading too much into it. Again, these drills one-on-one obviously is going to be good for the offense when it comes to routes, and usually it's good for the defense and one-on-one pass protection because there's more space. So I think you're probably reading more into it than you should, but that's what you do, and I think that's fine. But it is fun to watch. You get, you know, from a fan standpoint, you love seeing the Jair Alexander Romeo Doubs matchup. And if you get there and you're there every day, you kind of see that battle play out. And I think Ja, I'm sure, is probably sick of people writing that Romeo Doubs getting the better of him, if I'm guessing, because it feels like we're hearing that a lot, whether it's you writing about it or talking about it on air.
So I can also see the pass rush, pass protection one-on-ones going on beyond the DBs versus wide receivers and tight ends. You said that the defense usually has the upper hand on that. Is that you just making excuses for the rare times you were getting beaten, or why does the defense have the upper
hand? But just think about it this way. When you're rushing the passer, especially inside when it's guard or you're going against the center, you're typically going to have a lot of bodies, and there's not as much space as when you're just doing a one-on-one. Like, you make a great inside move, you're going to get bumped off by a center, or you're going to get bumped off by a tackle. So that's why I say that, but I'm sure there's probably some bias within that statement as well.
So
Must be much windier up there in Lambeau than it is down here in Platteville.
It is definitely windy. I'm trying to mute and hide behind poles. But I was busy watching a
Ryan Poles.
Good one.
Thanks.
I believe there was a pitcher in the 70s and 80s named Dick Pole. Pitched for the Mariners.
I think it's Dick
teams.
Trickle, isn't it? Isn't it Dick Trickle?
Him too. But he was definitely driving a race car instead.
Bill Polian. In.
Good one.
Good one. The one-on-ones continue, and I this is a guy that I want to bring up because he actually just had a really nice twisting, contorting catch on a throw from Love, and that is Grant Dubose. Now, if you're a hardcore Packers fan, you know who that is. He's number 86. He was a seventh-round pick a year ago, had a back injury, missed all of the season, was on the practice squad all season, missed most of camp. Horn! But this Tausch goes to kind of what we were discussing earlier about Dontayvion Wicks, who's like the fourth guy on the depth chart. But like 5, 6, 7, 8, Shlemiel Shlemazo, there's some depth here where there are guys that I think there are going to be other teams that if the Packers only keep 6 or 7, Grant Dubose is a good example of that. Like, he has had a really strong camp. And I feel about guys like that, no one knows who he even is. Yeah. And I understand why.
This might be you being a prisoner of the moment, because we hear this every year. And it's, well, the Packers
then
guys
LaFleur
are always
is
better.
Too. Then LaFleur
well,
is too, because
no,
he's mentioned him.
But in the same respect, how many guys get picked up? That's all great. And I think it's great that Packer fans and media are, you know, touting their guys because they're doing some good things at practice. There's a lot of teams in the NFL and a lot of guys that do that. And that's not to say that if Dubois gets cut, somebody's going to pick him up. Could very well happen. But I've heard this story year after year. And how many times do you actually see that player get picked up outside of Taysom Hill, get picked up and be a big impact player somewhere else? It doesn't happen all that often. Now, it does, and that's the beauty of having a deep roster full of wideouts, is that you're going to probably have to get rid of some guys, and maybe you can trade a player and end up getting a pick if you're going to cut him, and he's going to be in high demand on the waiver wire. But at that time of the year, there's teams cutting guys that they don't want to cut either, and I think that's one of those – when you say things like that, I just think, okay, I respect it, but – we say this every year, and a lot of times these guys end up on the practice squad back with Green Bay.
Yeah, two things. One, I think Dubois or Dubose, however you – I've heard it both ways. I think he's in a little different spot just because I think that they have – he's gotten more work with the ones than you would expect.
Who's that wideout that you thought was going to end up taking Donald Driver's spot way back?
It wasn't me. Torrey Gurley is
Gurley.
The guy.
Oh, my God. We got Gurley. He's going to – and then I think he goes cut and he didn't play anymore. So
he did not have
I get
a,
it.
He did not do a lot. By the way, for those of you keeping score, they are running their number one offense Tay Wicks got the first snap at wide receiver, and now he just caught a pass over the middle, jumped to catch it, and then got hit. Even though they're in pads, I don't think that's supposed to happen with Eric Stokes knocking him pretty good on a pass across the middle. So he's getting plenty of work with the ones, in case you're keeping track of such things.
Oh, that greasy wheel. We had people saying they're going to trade him, and next thing you know, now he's taking reps. I guess Josh DiMaggio getting it done for Tay Wicks, getting some reps for him.
The power of Big Cat, to be sure. One more thing about the wide receiver group, though, because we do spend a lot of time talking about how much talent they have, right? And we saw what Bo Melton did in a game. First guy on the team to get a 100-yard receiving game last season. Like, there have been years where you looked at the wide receiver group here, maybe some of the ones when you were here, where there were guys making the team as the fifth or sixth receiver because they had to have a fifth or sixth guy. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like they were clear cut, oh, this guy we have to have on our team. We just have to have enough wide receivers. I do think that is different now. And I think that more than anything is why I'm looking at guys like DuBose and thinking, oh, Romeo Doubs with a drop. Don't see that very often.
No, he's going to move. Wicks just jumped him.
Moving him down. Moving him down the depth chart. Yeah. Well, I think what happened, Tausch, was Dontavian Wicks, after family night and after hearing our programming, said to Matt LaFleur, pour me in, coach, like you like to say, with Tito's.
You know that's my favorite, Tito's handmade vodka. On game day or practice day or off day, pour me in, coach. From a seat in the stands to the best seat on the couch, root for your favorite team with your favorite team spirit. Stack a spicy Bloody Mary for your warm-up. Salt the rim of a Titarita during halftime or take home the win with Tito's and whatever your heart desires. I love cranberry. If you like soda, water, squeeze a lemon, whatever it is, you're calling the game. You change up your roster, wash that lucky jersey, as long as you make Tito's your first round bottle pick. Whose house? Oh, baby, it's Tito's house. Find cocktail recipes for every fan at titosvodka.com. Crafted to be savored responsibly.
Tay Wicks with another rep number one group. I will try to keep track of those even during Whoa, wow. Nelly, which is next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com. Ready to roll, ready to not, ready to give it one more shot. Let the game
begin, something to believe in. Dueling football practices continues. Time now, though, for Whoa, Nelly.
If the topic is good, the guys discuss.
Just the other morning, I had breakfast at Tracy Rocker's house. His mama brought out 15 flapjacks. He said, mama, take back 5 of them flapjacks. I gotta stay hungry for the Crimson Tide.
But if it's not, the show must go on. It's time for
Whoa, Nelly!
On Wildy and Tausch.
All right, guys, congratulations to the Chicago White Sox. They have tied the American League record with 20 consecutive losses. 21 consecutive losses. They set the AL record with a loss tonight, very appropriately facing the Oakland Athletics. And then they're in the pursuit of history, because I know we're all wondering, what's the overall record? So the AL record in their grasps with a loss tonight. The National League record, 23 losses in a row, set by the 1961 Philadelphia Phillies. The all-time Major League Baseball record for consecutive losses in a season, 26 games, set by the 1889 Louisville Colonels of the American Association.
Homer saw some of those games. They were terrible.
Tom Oates, I think, was halfway through his career. If you are a Chicago White Sox fan, which I have several friends who are you now pulling for history because it's gotten so bad?
No. if you're a White Sox fan,
yep.
Why would you want to have the record of being the worst?
Because you either get to be all-time historically
bad. No, this isn't radio. Listen, our people will say either be great or be god-awful. Don't be average, like mediocre. That I don't believe counts in sports. I don't want to be all-time bad. I don't want to be known as the worst. I don't want to be on a team that's 0-16. I don't want to be on a team that was the only win for a 1-15 team. You want to win every time you're out. And if you don't, you want to compete and battle. You don't want to be some laughing stock that can't win a game. And a matter of fact, I think the league, as I said yesterday, this needs to be a case where teams get relegated and ownerships don't just let this happen. Because baseball, for all of us that have coached, played, or been, it is a small margin game when you're talking about Major League Baseball. And the fact that you'd be this bad, that's on the organization just as much as on everybody else. And why on earth, as a fan, I want to have 20, 21, 22 straight losses? It's one thing to want to have the number one pick when your season's over. It's another thing to be the worst of the worst of the worst, which is where these guys are headed. And I don't want any part of that.
Jesse, are your White Sox friends rooting for them to get the record?
A couple of them said that going into the season, they knew that this would be one of the worst teams they've ever watched. So I will text him and ask him, Jordan, Tier 2 Jordan. I will text Jordan and ask him if he is watching with the hopes that the White Sox break history in the next 7 days.
Here's the only reason I'm curious, Jesse, and if you're a fan of the team, you never want them to lose, right? Is the only reason then to root for them is so it's so embarrassing. You root for them to lose. Let's say they lose, let's say they get to 30 losses. That it's so embarrassing that as Tausch, they're not going to get relegated. I'm sorry that his dream of baseball relegation will not come true. And the Indianapolis, whatever their team is called now, will be called up to the majors. But so embarrassing that it forces Major League Baseball and forces Jerry Reinsdorf to act, because there's no excuse for a big market team, which Chicago is, to be this horrendous.
I think there's no different. Like, if the White Sox finish one game better than the 1889 Louisville Colonels, you're just going to look back on this season, if you're a White Sox fan at any point, just say, wow, remember how bad we were that year? You could always hang on to for when the White Sox do become, you know, fantastically relevant again, as opposed to abysmally relevant this year.
When's that going to be?
And if they ever do compete for a World Series and they get there, then fans can say, I remember the year that they were the worst team in baseball history, and they turned this thing around, and now they win the World Series, as opposed to just saying it was another really bad year. Like, if you're going to be bad, just be historically bad so you have that. At this point, like, the White Sox have actually become the most interesting story in baseball right now because they're so bad. We're not talking about
Jesse,
the Phillies,
you know,
and Ohtani
instead
and the Dodgers.
Instead of just struggling month to month, they can barely pay rent and anything else, let's just lose millions of dollars and be completely in debt and broke beyond belief.
No one's saying that.
But that is what you're saying.
No.
It's literally the exact same thing. No, it is. Like, I don't want to just barely lose money. I want to be so broke that I'm broke on broke. That's what you're saying.
If you've wrapped up,
I don't think that's the same.
It's not at all the same.
But it is.
No, it's not. We're not talking about functional day-to-day living for you to be able to.
I'm trying to make this thing on an equal playing basis. I'm trying.
Well, you're not.
That wasn't it.
No, the fact that you think that a professional team would rather be 100 games below 500 and be
historically
the worst of all time instead of being an 81-81 team is just so dumbfounding to me. It makes me think you don't know anything about sports.
I'm not saying the players want to be that bad. I'm saying if you're a fan of the team and you're grinding this thing out all season long, tuning into these games, laughing at your own team, hearing people around the country laughing at your own team, you at least want to be the worst if you're at this point. Once you get three-quarters of the way, it's like watching a no-hitter. If you're at AmFam Field...
So, Jesse, instead of bowling a 120, you'd rather bowl a zero. Yeah? Because you want to... If you're going to have a bad score, you'd rather just be the worst of worst.
This is better
So, you know, I'm normally bowl a 200. I don't want to bowl a 120 or I don't pick up spares. I'd rather just bowl a zero and gutter every ball. That's what you're saying.
I think if you're...
That one was good.
But again,
the same thing as being broke on broke, but yeah.
You're putting yourself as the competitor here, and competitors are never going to openly tank and be that bad. But if you're going to look back on it and say that this... Like, I bowled so bad that I bowled a 5 on national TV, and it was the worst score ever recorded on TV.
So you'd rather do that.
TV.
The worst,
and then
the worst
I come back later and win a tournament.
Ever.
Yeah, I think. But again, it's different. It's not the same yet because you're. I'm
because
saying
it doesn't
as an,
fit your narrative.
I'm
yeah,
saying
I get
it as an observer, not as one. Like, the players on the White Sox are going to try and beat the Oakland Athletics tonight. Of that, I have no doubt. They're probably not going to do so because they haven't done it for 3 weeks. But as a fan watching it.
So if we were doing your bowling thing and Tausch and I are there, we would be the ones. If you're not going to get a 300, we would root for you to get a 3. That's what you're saying?
I think so, yes. But again, yeah, totally different.
This was quite a journey.
Because the baseball season is a 6-month grind. They play almost every day.
Yeah.
And if you're a fan of the Milwaukee Brewers or the St. Louis Cardinals or the Los Angeles Dodgers, you're putting in time to cheer on your team all season long. If they're going to be this bad, just let it be terrible. Like, I would rather go down as the worst.
And that's fine. I completely disagree with that. I'd rather compete and maybe not have a great day and bowl a 130 than bowl a zero. It's me. And if I'm the White Sox, I'm not interested in, I'm going to set a record, guys. We're 25 straight losses. I don't want any part of that. I'm saying, blank off. I'm winning a game, so you shut up. That's what I'm saying.
I don't think, yes, as a player, no one is saying that. As a fan,
as a
maybe.
Fan, you think I want to sit here and have are. Cubs fans tell you, hey, kudos to y'all. You lost 25. Way to set a record.
Well, we'll have to ask Jordan or Josh or whoever tier two is that is involved. Here's my question. How many wins do the White Sox have? Because to get to
28, I think they're at 28 wins.
So to get to 100 games, 100 games under 500, you would have to go 31-131, correct? Because there's 162 games.
Yes.
So are we rooting for that as non-White Sox fans?
There's no way they're only going to win 4 games the rest. Maybe.
Do they haven't won a game since Joe Biden announced that he wasn't president or going to be president anymore?
He wasn't the
White Sox are 27-88 entering play.
That could be a whole other conversation. All right, fair enough.
Let me ask you this, guys. The White Sox play at the Athletics at 8:40 tonight. The Phillies and Dodgers are the two best teams in the NL. They play at 9:10. Which game would you rather watch tonight?
Tonight, I'll say, you know what, Jesse, you maybe proved the point. I'm more intrigued to see if the White Sox lose again and do it than I am a good baseball game between the Dodgers and Phillies. You got me. Because I want to see you throw 10 straight gutter balls in comparison to bowling a 120. Maybe I've been thinking about this the wrong way the whole time.
My understanding is that baseball was all over anyway because Shohei Ohtani went to the Dodgers and everyone's championship window had closed. So maybe the White Sox are ahead of the curve with us.
Whoa, Nelly!
They knew going into this year. It's all said and done.
All right. Is that all you got, Jesse? Or did you have more insightful topics?
Do you guys know where Tahiti is?
Is that the one that's over by Australia?
Yes, kind of. I mean, it's between.
And they got those like beautiful, like woven, almost like you're right on the water and the beach. Like you can sleep with the water hitting your feet. I think that's Tahiti. It's Tahiti or Tibet. I don't know. It's one or the other.
I can see how you get those two mixed up. Isn't that where they're doing the
Bora Bora
thing for the Olympics?
Where's Bora Bora? Where's Bora Bora?
Boring, am I right?
Nice.
Good one.
I did not know where Tahiti was. I thought it was in the Caribbean, and it was like kind of close to France, because they're doing the surfing competition for the Olympics in Tahiti. Tahiti is pretty much the furthest you can get in the world from France. It's the opposite corner between Hawaii and Australia.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought it was.
I had no idea that's where Tahiti was. Why the heck are they playing the surfing competition in Tahiti? You got to have something closer to France other than...
Because you can't do it on the Seine.
You can't do it the polar opposite end of the world. Go somewhere closer.
There's poop in the river. I'm sure that that's probably where the best surfing is. I don't know.
But like, does Tahiti just
the
get
river?
Does Tahiti There's just get the surfing all the time now?
No, they spend $1 billion to clean up the Seine River, and now people are still getting violently ill swimming in that poop infested river. But they're still doing it, which again, I don't know why they're doing that, but that's why they're in Tahiti surfing, because the Seine doesn't have good waves.
I think we should make Tahiti the Rose Bowl.
They need Kohler services.
They need Kohler services to put a big old whirlpool in, and they can get that thing flowing. And you know what? That's where you need to go. If it's time to beat the heat with a refreshing new shower bath from Kohler Services. Family-owned, 150 years Kohler is your Wisconsin manufacturer providing care for life. This month only, get 0% interest financing for 12 months and a free shower door with your Lugstone shower remodel. Visit KohlerServicesWI.com to request your free quote with fast professional installation, always included. Again, KohlerServicesWI.com. And I think to get some good jet stream going, to get that surfing so you don't have to go all the way to Tibet to do it.
Bora Bora is also in the Tahiti-ish region between Hawaii and Australia.
Okay, so they're
Tibet,
both
there. Not as much.
Tibet's a little closer, I think, to China, if my memory serves me.
We will wrap things up next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
Jesse, I've got Rob Vogel chiming in. I think we need to work on our geography.
Well, I mean, we don't. It's on the exact opposite end of the world, and it's still preposterous. Thank you to, again, the text line is very kind with their feedback to the show. Jim in Indianapolis. Haven't checked those. Surfing is in Tahiti because it is part of French Polynesia, a territory of France. So the competition is technically still in France. Thank you, Jim, for the clarification. That still doesn't make any sense, that you would go the opposite end of the world just to do the surfing competition when everything else is taking place
well,
in regular France.
If it's an event that can't, they have to have specific places where, unless you created like a wave pool, right? Like if it was a fabricated surfing event.
The Kalahari
but
did it. How come the Olympics
real,
can't?
That sounds like that should be a drop. Yes, French Polynesia. But I learned something new today, which is good. At the same time, what if the Olympics, let's say the Olympics are in New Orleans, which I don't think would ever happen. But I don't think you can surf in the Gulf of Mexico very effectively, right? So would we have to go down to Puerto Rico or Guam? Those are U.S. territories, right? Is that how they would have to do it?
I'm sure they would just
fascinated by it.
They would go to San Diego, but no, apparently based on this year, we would go to Hawaii because it's a United States territory. That's what we're going to do over there.
It's an actual state in that one.
Well, yeah.
I don't get it. I would say this. If you have an event that you cannot host at the host city, then maybe it shouldn't be an event. But I don't want the surfers in the YouTube comments to come after me for that hot take. So, again, there are certain events that I don't quite understand. But what makes badminton a better Olympic sport than surfing? I can't argue that point because I've enjoyed watching rugby. I've enjoyed watching biathlon. I've enjoyed all that. I am glad that the track and field has started, though, because I've enjoyed that more than anything. All right, Jesse. Tausch is going to be at Badgers practice again tomorrow. Is that accurate?
That's what I hear. I think we should send a chaperone with him tomorrow.
It's going to be a long day for you and me, that's for sure. All right, that's it for us today. The Wednesday edition is coming up tomorrow with Tausch in Platteville.
Can you get a one-on-one with Tay Wicks tomorrow for us, Jason? Tay Wicks, one-on-one, talk about his playing time.
I will have to have that conversation with him. All right, the winds are picking up. That means we got to go. Thanks for coming along for the ride. Have a great day. Take care. Be good.
Miss any of today's episode of Wildy and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin? Commercial-free full show podcasts are available free on Wisconsin On Demand.